Good afternoon. It is Wednesday, August 20th. I'm your host, Stan Jastrzebski, and this is Ask the Mayor. We are pleased to be joined this week, as we are every third Wednesday of the month, by Bloomington Mayor Mark Krzan. Mr. Mayor, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Before we get started, it is my duty to point out there are a couple of ways you can submit your questions to Mayor Krzan during the next half hour. If you're near a telephone, you may want to jot down the following two numbers. If you are local to our studios, you can call us at area code 812-855-0811. You may also dial us toll-free from anywhere if you're listening over the internet, perhaps, at area code 877-285-9348. You may also send us an email during the show or anytime, really, at mayor@indiana.edu. Mr. Mayor, earlier today, you and Economic Development President Ron Walker and others announced creation of the Bloomington Technology Partnership. Talk a little about that, if you would, to start.
The partnership is modeled after something called the Bloomington Life Sciences Project, that is a partnership that is a partnership that started in 2003 with the city and BEDC, the Bloomington Economic Development Corporation. And it was designed to assist the attraction, retention, and expansion of life science businesses. And that's exactly what this does for the technology sector. It's to assist the existing technology business community, but also to try to expand it and to attract new businesses to the community. And I think it's exactly the kind of industry that we're trying to attract to Bloomington. I said at the press conference this morning that Bloomington's economy is in transition, and I think it has been now for quite some time as we shift away from relying solely on old manufacturing, traditional manufacturing sector jobs, that it will take the diversification of our economy to keep us moving forward. And we think this partnership will go a long way toward attaining that goal.
Are there particular facets of the technology industry, be they biotech or perhaps, you know, newfangled, if you will, manufacturing, that you want to particularly see focused upon?
Well, and you know, and yes, and for me, newfangled is actually a term of art. So I think that probably is exactly what I'm looking for. But you also mentioned biotech, and I think that's an important point. And that is that we have the life sciences sector. We have a technology sector, and something that Michael McRobbie had talked about long before he became president of IU was the fact that those two can certainly blend in terms of their effort and their contribution toward the economic vitality of a community. And I think we'll start to see the same here. And that's where you see BEDC's leadership. This is not instead of the life sciences industry. This is in addition to. And so there'll be some tech industries, tech businesses that have absolutely nothing to do with the biotech or with life sciences. Some that will, and I think you'll start to see that each type of industry can support the other, that there are tech-related businesses that will support the life science industry. The life science industry will need some tech support that really has nothing to do with life sciences. It's more about the operations of a company. And it's also the fact that you have this coexistence of these kind of industries, I think, is lending itself to just creating an atmosphere in the community, people refer to a business climate. I think this is the kind of thing that I'm anxious to really get into in terms of the downtown area. The university, of course, is looking at north of the bypass. We've got other investors who are looking down at what sadly was a main employer, RCA for some, Thompson for others, and now is starting to, I think you'll see, become even more of an incubator for these new kind of life science, tech-related businesses. And all of that together, even competitors, even the people who are in direct competition with one another, coming together in this kind of an atmosphere benefits everyone. And that's what we've seen in the incubator in the downtown, in the north part of the Showers building. The InVenture as an incubator is creating clusters of tech-related businesses that are, you know, people talk about, a lot of words get overused, but the synergies that are occurring, lessons learned that are shared with one another. The fact that just by their very existence, they are serving as a magnet for, we hope, for graduates of our own School of Informatics here at IU, that the knowledge that things are happening in Bloomington, it may not be that you know it's one particular company or another. It's the entire the quilt, as it were, not just the one patch. And that's what's exciting to me about this partnership and just our economy in general.
Some of the partnership's funding is going to come from the city. Some is going to come from BEDC. Now, obviously, the city has fallen prey to the same thing that many cities in Indiana have felt, and that is a loss of revenue based on changes to property tax law. Now, this is discretionary funding as far as the city is concerned, is what Ron Walker told me. And so is this something that you see as in danger of losing its funding, or is it something that you see as protected based on the fact that it's new and it's important to city development? How do you see this getting money in a time where money is in short supply?
I think the fact that money is in short supply is exactly why we want to be doing this kind of investment. The fact that we would invest in almost an idea technology and the creation of jobs, the creation, expansion of existing businesses, the attraction of new businesses is what will then feed the local tax base. And in fact, spread it out more so that you don't have to rely on just what you've got, your finite pool of resources that you're expanding. It's not just property tax revenue. It's companies that are located in our TIF districts and the CREED district, all these acronyms that are out there that are essentially economic revitalization and some investment funds that we then as a city can use to support infrastructure, to provide services. So it is difficult. I mean, it's just like education and the university finds itself in the crosshairs of budget cutters at the state level when times are tough. And yet that's probably the last place you should be cutting. Social services will tend to be first to be cut. I know when we first came in my administration, we were trying to balance budgets, and we increased the Johns Hopkins Social Service Fund precisely because those are the people who are probably suffering the worst in a bad economy, and those who once are supported can get back into becoming productive members of society in terms of tax revenues. And that's I think you've got to be long. You have to have a broad vision and take a long-term approach. And investing in something like this up front makes all the sense to me.
It strikes me that this is the kind of solution that it sounds like a lot of people are doing. Columbus is in a very similar boat to Bloomington in a lot of ways. This sort of New Deal Democrat attitude of the pump priming. You have to have some money to make money. You have to put money into something. It's the idea of getting that water into the well so that it comes out in a greater flow later. Is that the way that you view solving these problems that are exacerbated by property tax changes?
You know, I'm a fan of Roosevelt. I'm a fan of New Deal style government. At the same time, this isn't quite that, because you really at that point it was government investing in public works projects and to prime the pump. And there may be times in maybe communities where that has to happen. I think in Bloomington, we are well enough situated, especially with the economy thriving in some sectors of technology, life science-based companies, in fact, trying to expand while some other companies are struggling, that we do have an opportunity to do exactly what we're doing today, and that is partnering with the private sector, who's also paying into this, the university, Ivy Tech, the education sector, and government sector, as opposed to all being government subsidized. And so my hope is, and I think what we've seen the results of the Bloomington Life Science Partnership that was started during the Fernandez administration, was that, yes, there's a cost initially to government up front. The long-term benefits to the community, proves that it was an investment, not simply spending.
Reminder, you can get a hold of Mayor Cruzan, if you like, by calling 812-855-0811 or toll-free at 877-285-9348. You can also email mayor@indiana.edu. I mentioned Columbus a minute ago, and what's going on there in a certain regard is they have a large almost economic partner with the city in Cummins, which is just making money hand over fist even in these economic times. And Cummins is doing things like helping to build a downtown parking garage such that it can then build a large office building and bring in 500 jobs. Are there talks at all of trying to see if Bloomington government can, you know, use the goodwill of people like Cook Pharmaca who are also making money and try to make that an economic development partnership that works and offer them – either offer them an incentive or you know, ask them to, if they have windfall profits, share the wealth in some ways?
Not so much in terms of windfall profits to share the wealth, but I think that's already happening. I think the companies you mentioned, you know, Cook – we'll start just with Cook they are sharing that wealth by reinvesting in the community by growing Cook Pharmaca. CFC, the real estate branch of Cook. I mean, when there are and again, I don't want to classify it as windfall profits, but when there are profits, that's a company that's reinvesting in the community, even by way of investing in other divisions of its own company. They're employing people. They're providing opportunities for an awful lot of people. It's also creating an atmosphere that people are wanting to visit Bloomington. And I think they're part of the process that I talked about this morning of building a bridge from our more traditional manufacturing economy into the new tradition of economic development is how I referred to it this morning. And I think that's exactly what they're already doing. So I wouldn't call it necessarily, you know, a revenue sharing plan per se, but it is that. It's not something that I think ever should be mandated by government and, you know, where people, companies, individuals pay taxes right now. I suppose that's a revenue sharing of sorts. But in terms of the goal that we have for this partnership, for all the economic vitality efforts we have underway, it absolutely is to create wealth, and that wealth is something that will it assists every income sector in the community, including sadly those who may not have any income right now. I looked today; it was very notable that Barry Lessau, the executive director of the Monroe County United Way, was at this announcement. I mean, this is something when wealth is created in the community, you start to see assistance growing for social services and for every sector of the economy. And conversely, when the economy is going south, you see donations, contributions, charitable contributions going down, and it makes sense. So to me, the diversification of the economy, the health of the economy is something that can benefit all. It will never be everything we want it to be, but I think companies, and not just Cook, but companies that have been successful in Bloomington are sharing the wealth in a lot of ways. It's income. It's direct income to employees. The ripple effect it has on all the support businesses in town and where all those employees spend their money, and also in terms of social service support, in terms of United Way campaigns and direct contributions and contributions that the companies themselves may not even be aware their employees are making in terms of dollars and volunteer hours. So and I look at other successful communities and those that are suffering, and even in our past, when we've suffered, it's when you start to see the entire that those synergies start to evaporate and investments stop being made. And I think now we are in a very good position. We don't want to take anything for granted.
With respect to the challenges brought about by property tax reform, Bloomington has a good local angle, and that is that Peggy Welch is chairing the House Summer Study Committee on property tax reform and has told me she's going to have 5 or 6 meetings by the end of the summer to talk about what can be done, what have the ramifications been. What conversations, if any, have you had with her about how it's affecting Bloomington?
Well, Peggy actually has worked on this issue even well before this committee was created. I mean, she's been talking about this back really when I was still in the legislature, going back to 2002. Vi Simpson has been working on the issue, and especially in terms of how it impacts school funding formula and property taxation. Matt Pierce has campaigned on the issue, and all three of them have heard from us back when Susan Clark was the controller for the city. Now Mike Trexler is controller. That our concern isn't the immediate issue; it's the long term. And I know Judy Sharp has the county assessor has talked with the local legislative delegation, and in fact. And I wish I'd remember the date. Maybe somebody can text me. We've already had one meeting with IAC, the Indiana Association of Cities and Towns, came to Bloomington and did a presentation on the impact of House Bill 1001, which is the property tax measure you're talking about. And the Judy Sharp is now sponsoring one where all the legislators are being invited to. I want to say it's on September. It's the very first week of September. So the local legislative delegation is sensitive to the impact on Bloomington and on Monroe County with the knowledge that there's not an immediate adverse impact. Longer term, I think, is where we're going to see the issues starting in the 2010 budget, which we'll start to prepare in 2009 and then 2011. I just had a meeting with Vic Kelson, the president of the county council, the unenviable position of trying to put together a county budget right now along with his colleagues. And he also is concerned about that very issue. What's the long-term impact going to be of that bill? And I have to say, as a former legislator, and I have not talked to Peggy about this and need to, is what you always have to watch out for the backlash that now we are going to see. Communities in the state are suffering. There's no doubt that there are communities just up the road a few miles in Martinsville where they got the double whammy. They are being impacted adversely significantly by the property tax issue and the flooding issue, which they have out-of-pocket expenses that insurance won't cover. And again, I don't envy the city government having to deal with that. The legislature knows that there are those kind of problems out there, and they will want to respond to those. The question is, will they respond to them by softening the problems for those existing communities with the existing problems, or will they do it on the backs of communities and shift the cost to communities that really aren't suffering right now and try to even it out? And while that may seem like, well, that of course could never happen, that's exactly what happened with school funding formula. Is, you know, you start to see that some communities were frozen in with the property tax freeze years ago, and the legislature, without a bottomless pit in terms of cash, tried to balance and shift the problem as opposed to solve the problem. And I think that's where Peggy and Vi and Matt's sensitivities are. But there will be local ramifications. I think the concern is the uncertainty of what those will be.
Do you think that homeowners, especially those who are parents who were in favor of the idea of, hey, I want to pay less in property taxes, properly anticipated the ramifications that would mean for their children's schools, for public infrastructure? Do you think that people were thinking long enough term in telling their legislators, support this bill?
I it may be the reverse too. It may be that government explain to people well enough what the ramifications are going to be. You know, I still don't think that people realize that their sales tax has gone up from up to the 6%, and I think people don't realize now that it's the cost of goods is increased. Probably people will notice their first big purchase. The first car they go out to buy, the first appliance that might need to be replaced. And then you start to realize that this is real dollars. And yes, my property tax bill has come back at a lower amount, but in some sense we're shifting the burden. I continue to favor a graduated income tax. I think would distribute the pain more evenly. And the sales tax is a pretty regressive tax and falls evenly on a person, no matter their income. And I understand what the legislature felt a need to act, and people were demanding change on property taxes. There is no easy solution. I think the Daniels administration has taken the approach of trying to cut spending in some places because they – in terms of the balance to books, and I admire that. I know it's not an easy thing to do. At the same time, you have to wonder what the cost of having made some of those spending cuts will be in the long term. Not spending enough on education now does mean more spending on crime and prisons in the long run. It's a very good question, and I don't know. Maybe that's maybe where people should start, is to ask that question. Is all of us, did we know what we were getting into, and do we know exactly where it is we're headed?
I want to get to a couple of emails here quickly. First, a quick one. Someone writes, Mayor, what kind of recreational opportunities do you think can work in the McDole switchyard?
And by the way, let me just quickly say that I appreciate the staff sending this. The Association of Indiana Counties presentation will be on September 8th when it comes to the property tax issue. So if people do have the very question you're asking is, what is the impact and what are we – where are we headed – that's another opportunity to participate. In terms of the switchyard, I see the switchyard as being equivalent to the opportunity that was presented when going back to when the city was creating a Bryan Park. It's not exact, but it's comparable in terms of size. It can serve an area of town that in the south side that doesn't have that kind of an amenity. It will feed off of the trail. I know there's been some discussion of private development occurring possibly. That's not part of my vision. I think that it will spur private development. No pun intended.
No pun intended.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize I was doing that. It will promote development in and around around that area, along the trail and around the switchyard. I don't think the switchyard itself – I mean, it's such an opportunity to set aside some space. Some of it's in floodplain. Some of it's green space. Some of it will have to be remediated. It was an old switchyard. But once it's established, I view it as a set aside of land that we can give to generation. I mean, again, it sounds overly dramatic. We can literally give to next generations of Bloomingtonians, and I don't see building a restaurant on it or a private office space or anything. I think that will come, and it will become a very attractive spot and a magnet for that kind of growth and investment around it. But my vision for that property is to preserve it for the community. Possibly now when it comes to recreational opportunities, I think there's enough space there that you could see. I could even see a rail-related museum aspect to it. I can see active use in terms of park space, passive use that I think could simply be let to go wild. And I think we'll have a lot of public input. There's one catch to all of this, and is that we don't own it yet. We are still negotiating with CSX, and I hope that we will, by the end of the year, have been able to make an offer. We've actually made an offer. It was simply to get the discussions going and the negotiations underway. So we've got a long way to go on getting it done. The City Council did set aside funding in this year's budget when they voted on it last year, and we hope to be able to succeed to get that property.
I'd like to spend our last few minutes on a topic that's been of some interest to college towns around the state the last couple of days, and that is there's a group going around called the Amethyst Initiative, which is asking college presidents to sign on to a petition that they are circulating, which would offer their support for a national push to move the drinking age down to 18 from 21. Now, President McRobbie has not signed this. In fact, the only president in Indiana of a college who has signed it is Dr. Bobby Fong of Butler. I'm curious, as the mayor of a college town which relies on, you know, something like 40,000 college students for economic development and infrastructure payments and all sorts of monies that come in from the university and from the students indirectly, what would you think about such a move?
You know, I would say it's not been the top of my list. to consider. But just top of the head, and having gone back to even being in student government here at IU, the thing I'm more concerned about than underage drinking, which is a concern and unfortunately a growing concern if you talk to the dean of students' office, it's underage drinking and driving. And we are seeing more students now move out into the community, obviously in downtown. There will be upwards of 2,000 living in the downtown area that did not live there just 4 years ago. And, there are obviously bars located downtown, but there are parties on campus. I know it's the unspoken truth maybe, and off campus. And Ken Gross Lewis would be, I think, a fascinating person to discuss this with, someone who looks at it from a student perspective, looked at it from an administrative perspective, and was supportive of allowing drinking on campus because of the concern that people were being – almost that perverse incentive to go off campus, drink, and then come back onto campus, and the drive being the dangerous part. I think it would have to be policed and it would have to be monitored to see how responsibly it was being done. Again, it's not necessarily not really at the top of my agenda to be working on, but I can see I haven't heard about this group either. There needs to be I think it'd be worth looking at to see what might be able to be done to diminish the problem of driving while drunk.
Well, put back on your legislator hat for me for a second. Talk about this in terms of what the way you might think the state legislature would look at this. Obviously, a lot of federal highway dollars are tied to having the drinking age. States can legally lower it if they want to, but they're going to lose a significant portion of their funding. Mm-hmm. Do you believe there's any way that the Indiana legislature could be persuaded to go along with this?
I think that'd be very unlikely, especially in a year while they're talking about the Sunday sales. I mean, I'm just talking about the politics of it. I think if they're talking about Sunday sales, which they are, and clearly the movement has started there, and there's revenue to be realized there, if you believe the proponents, I don't see that there'd be any movement toward that. I think it would almost have to come from – it's interesting, it's with university presidents. It would almost have to come from within universities to talk about – and I think enforcement on campus. When Ken Gross Lewis was talking about it, he wasn't talking about lowering the age. He's talking about allowing those who are of age, whatever that age would be, to be able to drink on campus. And then that may be the place to start as opposed to trying to lower the age. I know that it's a growing concern from a city perspective because we have such a large increase in population of students in the downtown area.
Lastly, I want to get to one more quick email in our last minute here. Someone wants to know if we could perhaps put some more water fountains along the Rails to Trails trail. She says there's only one in 7 miles and she'd like to see more. Is that on
the
docket?
I don't know which trail that – but if you could let us know, maybe it's on that list there. If you let us know which trails, and Parks and Recreation is very responsive to its users, and if we could maybe find that out and just take a look. I know that for the Beeline, that's certainly something that we're looking at for human and canine alike. There'll be some offerings for fountains. And I know the trails are very extensively used, and on Clear Creek Trail may be the one we're talking about. If you want to email, I forget what the email here is, but mayor@bloomington.in.gov is how you can contact me directly with your precise trail.
Well, we thank you, Mr. Cruzan, and with my thanks also to Mike Pashkash and Ariana Prothero. I am Stan Jastrzebski. Please join us again next week for Ask the Mayor.